Shmuel Beis, chapter 4. So we had learned about the death of Avner. And at this point, the David HaMelech had come back from the land of the Plishtim after the death of Shaul. And the tribe of Yehuda had accepted him as king. They made him king, and he was reigned out of Hebron. And the other 11 tribes had made the son of Shaul king. His name was Ishbosheth. And we mentioned that Avner was the one who really put Ishbosheth in power. Avner was the big general defense minister. He ran the country. And out of a sense of loyalty to the house of Shaul, and also because the verse had that before Binyamin was born, had told Yaakov Avinu that his son Binyamin would be, you'll still have children that kings will come out from, and it was kings in plural. So he understood that there would be two great leaders, that with two leaders of the Jewish people would come out from Binyamin, so therefore he made Ishbosheth king. But then he started having regrets. It's interesting how the whole thing happened, right? His son, Ishbosheth, accused Avner of an improper relationship. Now, not improper in a sense that it was immoral or anything like that, but it was because out of respect to the previous king, it's not proper for someone else to take her for a wife. That was the idea. A certain respect that he asked Avner. Now, it's not clear that if Avner really did have that relationship, or even if he did, but it was how the subject was brought up. When you depend on somebody and you appreciate all the good things they do, you're much less likely to criticize them or make a big deal over something minor. Or even if to you it's important, but if you appreciate everything they've done for you, you may not give them a hard time over a small issue. And so Avner was very upset, and he saw that Ishbosheth, in his mind, was really not fit to be king. He just read the cards. He just decided that was like the final straw. And he decided to bring the people to David. He realized that David was meant to be king. Unfortunately, he was killed by Yoav. And we talked about the whole debate between him and Yoav. Unfortunately, these are kinds of things that we'll never know. That sometimes Yoav accused him of killing his brother, which he did kill his brother, but Yoav felt that he didn't have to kill him. He could have injured him, and therefore he felt that he was guilty. And it's a difficult question. Nobody was there on the battlefield. Nobody knows what he intended to do, what he didn't intend to do. Could he have just injured him instead of killing him? It's a difficult question. David wanted people to realize that he wasn't behind it. He wanted them to know that this wasn't how he did business. People have to know what kind of person they're getting as a king, and he wanted them to know that he doesn't have any part in this kind of, you know, killing a person in cold blood. That wasn't his kind of way of doing things. So David then cursed Yoav, and it kind of ended with an interesting thing. In 39, it's almost like he kind of expresses a weakness, but sometimes if a person is weak and he recognizes that weakness, that's okay. In other words, he said, I'm just starting, and it's the last verse, 39. It's a very interesting verse. Anochi rach hayom rach u'mashuach melech. I just started the job. Anashim eva b'nei Yisruya, and these people, it's very funny, these were his nephews, the sons of his sister. It's also interesting, it doesn't mention their father, it just mentions David's sister. You can imagine if David was a powerhouse, his sister must have been a powerhouse too. And that's it mentions that they were the sons of Shuya. So he says that they are more difficult than me. The Kasha means somebody who's hard, means that they're not easygoing. Like David would have felt, all right, leave it up to Hashem to take care of, you know. If Avner really did the wrong thing, Hashem will take. They were hard people. They were very tough. Yoav was a very tough, you know, tough general, tough person. And he said, really, this is what he says, Yishalem Hashem lo seira. Let Hashem pay back those that have done evil. And we'll come back to the question of whether he cursed them, whether it was right to curse them. But he was—he's sending a message, though, to the country that he doesn't approve of this kind of thing. taking vengeance, taking law in your own hands. That's just not the way he does business. So now we have Ishbosheth, but Ishbosheth was the figurehead. The real power was Avner, and Avner had died. The Yishma ben Shaul kimeis Avner, and the son of Shaul, verse 1, chapter 4. And the son of Shaul heard that Avner died, the Chevron, the Yufu Yodav, and he was weak. Without Avner, he didn't know what to do. V'kol Yisrael nifalu, and the whole Jewish people was bewildered. So, first question I want to ask you is, why does it say the Yishma ben Shaul? It doesn't call him by his name. It says the son of Shaul heard. It should say Ishbosheth. Until now, it called him by his name. And now, all of a sudden, it calls him by the son of Shaul.
Maybe he has no power anymore.
That's right. Okay, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In other words, the only thing he had was who his dad was. My dad's Shaul, so listen to me, no, the son of Shaul, like, before he had Abner, now he was weak. Okay. I also wanted to learn like that, which is a lot of the commentaries do. I saw an interesting commentary. Shaul was two different people. When he first got the job, he was known to be the most humble. If you remember, when they offered him the job, he hid. He was just, who, me? I'm just, taking care of my father's donkeys, whatever. So it says the son of Shaul. In other words, all of a sudden, he wasn't acting like the son of the king. He was acting like the son of Shaul, like being very humble. And it seems clear that he wasn't sure whether he wanted to be king. It's funny. It's almost like, he was thrust into this position and he just didn't know. But the son of Shaul heard Kimeis Avner. He heard that Avner had died in Chevron. Now, also, people never really know what the truth is. So, there were probably a lot of rumors, and things didn't get published. I mean, so nobody really knew if David was behind it and what was going to happen. And they also bring down that Avner was a very great person. He was really the support of the Jewish people. Now, behind every great king, a king can't do it alone. He needs a important ministers, people that run the government, people that take care of the country. The king makes the decisions, but they have to have somebody that carries them out. And that person was Avner. And so as long as Avner was around, so everybody felt pretty confident in things. But now that Avner died, people felt weak. They didn't know what to do. When there's a vacuum, that's when things happen, unfortunately, because people are bewildered. They don't know what to do. So let's see what happens. Shnei Anashim Saragidudim. There were two men, and these apparently were people that had fought in the army, people who were officers. Hayu ben Shaul, and they were in the army of the son of Shaul. Shema Echad Bana, one of them's name was Bana, Shema Sheni Rechav. These were Jewish people. Bnei Rimon, and they were descendants of Rimon Habei Rasi, that's the name of the family. Bnei Binyamin, and they actually were from the same tribe as the Shaul's son. Now this, part of the question is, where was the security? In other words, how did they get invited to the White House party? Like, where was the, but apparently they were a family, the same tribe, so they somehow, because they were from the officers, from the family of Binyamin, so they were able to come to and from the royal house without much concern. Kigan Be'er Sechosh Val Binyamin. This family, Be'erus, was one of the families of Binyamin. Now here it mentions the fourth verse here. The tribe had run away. If you remember that when the Shaul was defeated, the Plishtim were the power. They were very strong, and without Shaul to stand up to them, the people on the border towns were in danger, like Sederot or whatever. Like they had nowhere to go. They were so. It mentions there that they had to run away. They had to move to safer territory. It could be they were resentful of the son of Shaul, that he wasn't protecting them like his father. And that perhaps that was their motivation for what they were going to do. Because they had been displaced. Refugees are, sometimes you hear that when you hear the people in Haiti. Right? In the beginning, they're very grateful, save me, save me, save me. And then after a while, it's like, I've been waiting in line a long time. You guys are taking too long. You're not generous enough. And so it's just the nature of of people that they get resentful after a while when they're living in difficult circumstances. So because they, perhaps because they were displaced, perhaps they resented their government. Again, it's only a guess. We don't know, you know, but it just, the verse mentions it here almost as an introduction. Now then it throws in something else. Yehonasan ben Shaul. And Yonasan ben Shaul, he also had a descendant. Ben Necher Reglaim, he was a child that was lame, couldn't walk. Ben Klami was 5 years old. Now, it's not clear, why do we need to know about the son of Yonasan? It actually has nothing to do with the storyline. I mean, later on we're going to meet this son of Yonasan, but he has nothing to do with what's going to happen to Ishbosheth. So, why is it mentioned here? Let's just finish the line of thought, and then we'll see. Ubo Shamas Shol, how did he get lame? How did he lose the ability to walk? When they heard that Shol had been killed, Yonas and Yisrael, but Tiseu Amanto, his nursemaid, she heard that Shol was killed, and she realized that there was a danger to people that were descended of the throne, because it's very dangerous in a time of anarchy to be part of the royal family. You could be kidnapped, you could be, all kinds of things could happen. So she ran the tunnels, but unfortunately she dropped him. Not a very good thing to do. She dropped him and broke his feet, and they didn't have very good surgeons in those days, whatever. And Lanus Vyipa, and he became lame. Ushmo Mephibosheth, and his name was Mephibosheth. We mentioned that they both had funny names, Ishbosheth and Mephibosheth. The word Bosheth just reflects it, the word embarrassment. And some people say that the house of Shaul was just embarrassed. In other words, that whole dynasty was like a fallen dynasty. And it just reflects that, you know, that once Shaul had been killed and the kingship had been taken away from them, his descendants had this embarrassment about them, about the of their dynasty, of their future, of their. There is another thing we'll see later that it seems that Mephibosheth was a scholar, or he became a scholar. He was only 5 years old when this happened, and later on, when he used to speak, he was so brilliant that even he embarrassed the other scholars, meaning his words were so great, other scholars felt embarrassed around him, including King David, but that's going to come about later. But either way, so the question was, why does it mention he was lame over here? So should we throw that out to our, in other words, what? Yes?
Well, if he had that kind of an impediment, he wasn't fit to rule, mm-hmm. because there was so much that he would not be able to do.
Right. And so that's why we're going to see that the assassins are going to kill out the house of Shaul. Why didn't they kill Mephibosheth? And the answer is, he wasn't a threat to them because, as you said, he was lame. And it's interesting because they probably looked at this as being a big tragedy, mm-hmm. that he was lame and they dropped him, but that saved his life because he wasn't perceived as a threat. Yeah.
Maybe there's, because of the similarity of the name, it's mentioned that We have one awkward king, and now we have one that's unfit.
Mm-hmm.
Similar.
Almost that. The overall sense that the descendants of Shaul weren't fit really to run continue on. Perhaps.
It seems that he was compensated in other ways. That he was given a strong intellect.
Yes. Which is it's common sometimes with people that have. There's a concept that Hashem, you know, sometimes we all have our strengths and weaknesses, and sometimes we look and one person is able to, you know, lift the, you know, but Hashem is fair to everybody. He gives us all, you know, there's something special and unique about every person and their talents and their qualities, and, so that's a good point. So, so verse 5. But Yehoshua ben Rimon, so these people, army people, Haberasi Rochel Bana, Vyavu Kachom Ayom, they came at midday. So again, I read this. When I was in Israel many years ago, I was not used to the Europe. There's a European habit about what do they call it in the middle of the day where they take a nap?
Siesta.
Yes, that's it. And I went to a store on my lunch break, and it was closed. Mm-hmm. And somebody told me, oh, the owners, you know, they close the door, and they put the shades, and they take... So I couldn't get over that, because in America, lunchtime is the busiest time, because mm-hmm. people on their lunch break, they go in, and they... But apparently, I don't know if they still do that in the Middle East or not.
A lot of places do. You come back at 2 o'clock.
You come back at 2, right? So,
Mexico's where you didn't see this.
Yes, yeah.
No, a lot of places in Europe still do it.
Mm-hmm. I read that in Spain, they had to stop that mm-hmm. in order to be partners in European Union mm-hmm. because their workday was so different.
Right, you can't do business with that. So it's interesting that it even mentions that the king was taking a nap. I took it that he couldn't be that serious of a king if he's taking a nap in the middle of the day. You know, like, you know, here the country's fallen down. You know, everybody's worried. Everybody's nervous. Where's the king? He has the time. You know, like, although I didn't see this in the commentaries. I'm just saying that was the way it struck me, you know, like that. It could also be just that since that when it's very, very hot in the middle of the day, it's too hot to be outside. You know, that strong Middle Eastern, there's certain times of day where it's just, I mean, even in Atlanta in the summertime, in the middle of the day when the sun is, you don't want to stand outside very long. It's just, so perhaps that time of day is a perfect time to take a nap. Or
it seems to be common with southern countries. Mm-hmm. You know, they do it because of the heat.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't have, right. So he was lying down, and that was perhaps a good time for them to sneak in. So they came, but maybe they have an excuse, they wanted to come in. Now again, it doesn't call him Ben Shaul, here it calls him Ishboshes. He's taking his nap. And they got inside the house. Now, there are things here that we don't know what's going on, meaning that sometimes whenever the Tanakh throws in details, so we know that they don't record details that aren't important, that have no message to them. So it records a detail, and if we don't know the significance of it, so the commentators try to figure it out, it just throws in that there were sellers of wheat came through. Some people say that this was their disguise, that they came in as sellers of wheat. They were like holding loaves of bread on. So, you know, the royal kitchen, I suppose, had to buy a lot of, you know, foods and things, and so that was their excuse to get in the house. But it's not so clear why it mentions that the doors were open, the buyers were coming in to buy the grains, but meanwhile they got access to the kink. And they were assassins, and they snuck and they stabbed the king, and they went for the chomish, for that fifth rib that we talked about. That's, they killed him immediately. And he and his brother, they escaped. Now, it wasn't just that they escaped, though. Let's see verse 7. Again, the wording here is just awkward. And almost first it mentions that they killed him, and then it says they came in the house. Did their henchmen kill him, and then they came afterwards? Or did they make a cover, like, on the outside? Like, you know, like, maybe they were, like... Now here, we'll watch the room, and they were pretending to sell their wares to keep somebody else not to pay attention while their men snuck behind. And in other words, there's some kind of operation going on over here. You know, like you just read in there was this whole thing in the Arab Emirates where they got rid of the arms dealer for Hamas, you know, where they had a whole operation going on. And so it almost sounds like that over here, like, they came in to sell wheat, and then somebody else killed them, and then they came in to confirm the kill. Maybe and it almost like re-mentions it. Now this time they hit him and they kill Yisirus Rosha. Now they cut off his head, Yisirus Rosha, and they took his head, and they traveled through the night. We'll see that people throughout David's life misjudged him. You remember that sometimes when he defeated the Plishtim, it seemed to be in somewhat of a bloody manner. Now, David understood the Plishtim. He understood that they were killing Jewish people, and there was a certain language that they would understand. And that language was a certain force. And so David, when he dealt with the Plishtim, was very strong, and, you know, the... You know, if he needed to cut off the head to make a point, he cut off the head. That was what did it. They got the message. They didn't. The country had peace. But that, on the other hand, David HaMelech at the same time was very soft and very against shedding blood. But they, people, not everybody read him the right way. Throughout his life, there were people that misjudged him, which is just interesting. Like, we always find that there were people that, we'll see that later also, that there were people that misjudged him. So these people, apparently, they thought that they would be rewarded for doing this. They thought that they would be heroes, and this would buy them good jobs in David's government, because they had done David a favor. They thought that Ishbosheth was the head of the opposing government, and by their killing him, they would be presenting David with a kingdom, and so they surely would, they were opportunists. In other words, they were killing a person so that they could, you know, one of the things about in history, a lot of the, certainly in Rome, you know, how did you get to be Caesar? You killed the old Caesar. That was how they did it, you know. That's how people would get a promotion, was they would kill the guy ahead of them, and then they would take over the job. And so other cultures certainly had that. The one that was left standing, so to speak, was the one. So they kind of were hoping to advance in that way. David HaMelech, again, is setting up the monarchy, and he wants people to know that's not how a Jewish government works. You don't advance on somebody else's life. You don't... it could be that Ishbosheth was against David HaMelech ruling. We don't know. It could be that and there's no question that the Jewish people was in danger. The Plishtim were running over the country, and we needed leadership, but... And there's no question that as long as there were two heads, two kings, things were not good. But for them to kill a person like that was not our way. And but they were absolutely convinced that not only would David be pleased with them, but that David would reward them. So let's see. They're going to get a surprise. They brought the head of Ishbosheth, David to Hebron. They brought him to Hebron, V'yomer al HaMelech, and they said... So first of all, it says they went to the king. They acknowledged, it doesn't say they went to, they said, the king, you're it, David, you're our man. Hine Rosh Ishbosheth ben Shol. Here's the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Shol Oyvecha, your enemy. Asher Bikish is Nafshecha. Now, this is something we don't know about, but they said that David, and they were in Shol's army, they said that Ishbosheth really wanted to kill David. And it may be true, we don't really know that. That detail wasn't really put in there. But it could be that Ishbosheth, if he was the king of the Jewish people, maybe he did feel David was a threat and wanted to kill him.
It seems that's modifying Saul, though. Mm-hmm. Kind of Saul, your enemy, who sought to take your life.
No, but he's talking about Ishbosheth, even though he's the son of Saul. He's telling him that Ishbosheth was an enemy who sought your life.
Who sought you?
This is their justification for what they did.
For what they did. Not only that, we see how religious they are. See how pious it sounds. The Yitain Hashem, God has given you, Ladoniar, Master the King, Nichmas Hayom. Now, this is this idea of revenge. Hashem gave you revenge, Mishol Mizara. You know, everything that Shol did to you made you live in the caves and made you run away. Now, finally, Hashem has given you revenge for that. Look at all the, you know, all of that he put you through. Now, he and his descendants have gotten what they deserved. Very religious sounding, very pious. Yeah.
These two guys, Lachab and Manah, we've heard of them before?
No, just introduced. Brand new. Yeah.
Where did they just came out of the woodwork?
They came out of the woodwork, that's right. Yeah, these assassins, they just pop out of, yeah, they just, on their own initiative, just strange, too, because they were related to the house, they were from the same tribe.
Yeah, I just don't understand why out of the blue they decided to do this.
Yeah, I think I understood them to be opportunists.
Yeah, they wanted to help themselves.
They realized that they were on the losing side, and they wanted to be on the winning side. And you find in history people do that. They want to win favor with the other.
Yeah, and even as they're talking to David, and they're invoking the name of the Lord and everything, they're really sort of strutting their stuff. And look what we did this for you, we're the reason you're going to be the king now. They're really taking out a lot of the glory for themselves.
They obviously didn't know David.
No, they didn't.
Right. That's true. So you might say that's how the people of the house of Shol perceived David. In other words, when those years when they were chasing after him and he was on the most wanted list, they were saying that about David, that he's a murderer, he's a bloody, he's this, he's that. Right, that's right. That's the, that was what they said to David, and they were waiting for their reward. That's what they were sitting there waiting for, to be rewarded. So let's see what happens. Vayan David esrocha, so David answered them, b'nei rim anaber, so v'yomer lehem. He says, Chai Hashem asher poda es nafshi mikol sarah. He says, by the life of Hashem. In other words, when a person is very serious, they take an oath by the life of Hashem. And it's very interesting. He says that Hashem has saved me. People don't... I was not afraid that the king wanted to kill me, because Hashem is the one that saves me from the... I'm not saved by... Hashem is the one that saves me from all difficult things. And it's just interesting the way David, like, you know, see it as David, like, he faces so many challenges in life, and he doesn't say it was my wisdom, it was my good advisors, it was my strength. It's Hashem that saved me from all difficulties. It reminds us, Jacob saw this, that he blessed his children when he met Yosef's sons. He said, "Hamalach ha'goa osi mikol." It's a famous blessing that we usually sing this to our children. It's like a lullaby. That it's also on Simchas Torah when we say Hamalach ha'goa. It's called the blessing of the when Jacob is finally brought the sons of Yosef, and he says his departing words to them was Hamalach ha'goa osi mikol ra, that throughout life we face difficulties, and Hashem sends me an angel to an angel means a messenger. Hashem helps me overcome difficulties in life. So that same messenger that helped me, Hamalach ha'goa osi, the angel that saved me, should be with you. And that was the same way I faced difficulties throughout my life, and Hashem always came to my aid. That's the way we bench. That's what He benched the children of Yosef, and that's how we bench our children. That the Hashem that saves us, that we should realize that Hashem is the one that helps us overcome obstacles, and that He saves us from evil things. But it's a very similar language. Chai Hashem asher podes nafshi. Hashem is the one. I don't need people like you to save my life or to save me from evil. Hashem guarantees that I'll be saved from evil. Ki amagi lemor. Now, he wants to say, you should have known this. We typically have an idea that you don't kill somebody without a warning. And so what he wants to express is that you should have known that I wouldn't be happy about this. Ki amagi lemor. When I had somebody tell me, he named me Shol. When I was told about Shol himself who died, and he thought this was good news. And I killed him in Siklag. Asher lasiti li besur. Don't you remember earlier when the person told him that he had killed Shaul? And I was angry with that messenger. Now, it could be, the question is, why didn't these people get the message? Didn't they know about that? Some people thought that that was because it was an Amaleki that he killed him. It was, if you remember, that one man was an Amaleki. Other people felt that he was making up a story. If you remember, that he told a story that didn't really happen. In other words, he said, I killed Shaul, and he didn't really kill Shaul. And so, if you find that somebody is... people don't... If you find that somebody is telling you a whopper, you don't reward them. And so, when David heard this guy bragging about how he had killed the king, and he really didn't, that upset. Some people say he did, some people say he didn't. But if you had heard what happened, so... It could be that circumstance was different. But David says that you should have known. Over there, he was asked, Shaul was pretty much dead anyways, and he killed him. And still David was angry with that person and killed him. But you're wicked people, Horgos Ish Tzadik, and you killed a righteous person, Beveso, in his house, Amishko. It wasn't even fair. And I'm going to require his blood from you. You're gone. We don't need people like you in the world, he says to these people. So, first of all, it's interesting that even though Ish-Boshes was his enemy, he calls him a righteous person. And I would say this is one of the greatest things about David, is that his enemies don't become personal. In other words, if you remember when Shaul was chasing him and trying to kill him, he could still respect him. We tend to people either all good or all bad. They're whether they're with us or against us, or that we're not able sometimes to divide people and say, well, in this one way, they might be my enemy, but they have certain things they do that are productive, that are good, or in other ways, people are more complex. They're good and bad, and so they can be wrong on a certain issue, but that doesn't make everything about them bad. I can still, and if this issue we ever get over, we could be friends, right? So, David didn't perceive his enemies. He lived in a world where Hashem was in charge of the world. And so, he looked at Ish-bosheth. Ish-bosheth was not my enemy. Even if he tried to kill me, he was not my enemy. He was doing his job, I was doing mine. And you killed him, and he's an innocent person. So David told his men, and they killed him. He cuts his yedei, Mr. Glayim, and they cut off their hands and their feet. And they hung them up in Hebron. Now, we have very strong mitzvah to bury the dead, typically. Where, in fact, in Israel, they even do burial the same day. Because of the, but he felt that this was a very important message that people had to get, that people don't get a raise, they don't get a promotion by killing their superiors. That's not the way things are going to happen in our country. So now he does another interesting thing. You always get all these little surprises over here. So he has to bury the head of Ish-bosheth. That's what they brought him. So what does he do? So he went and he buried it in the cemetery, in the plot of Avner. So that's funny. If you remember, Avner and Ish-bosheth had a falling out. But then he buries Ish-bosheth's head together with Avner in Hebron. So why did he do that? It could be even though they had a falling out, they were close. They had a sense of loyalty to one another. Maybe he felt that was the appropriate place or the to bury him. Maybe he felt that it's just interesting that it mentions that. It kind of throws that in like, yeah.
Did Jesus mean by their proximity that they would make a
It could be. It could be. We have a whole story about Asa's head being buried in the cave of the Machpelah, mm-hmm. which is very interesting. That over there, the symbolism is that they say that Asa in his head really wanted to be good. But his body didn't let him. So, like, his head got buried in the cave. That in his head, he really wanted to be the firstborn and do what his father wanted. He had very good in his mind. He had very good ideas, but he couldn't carry through. So perhaps Ish-bosheth also had wanted the right things. He just was just powerless, just not able to carry through. Either way, he saw Avner as the one who propped up Ish-bosheth, and so therefore he put them together. So, very interesting, though, and again, we'll start the next chapter. I think I mentioned you many times, the chapters aren't really next chapters. They were put in by the Christians. So, sometimes it breaks up a thought, and it really is meant to be broken up, and sometimes it's not connected at all. It seems like this next verse is connected. When people saw that David was, they saw what happened, and they heard that David would have nothing to do with people that wanted to kill others for promotion. In a certain way now, they understood that David didn't kill Avner either. And I guess he would not have buried Ish-bosheth and next to Avner if he thought Avner was a bad guy. See, I guess people were very much afraid. The question is always this, when the 11 tribes had not accepted David as a king. And when you're the king and people don't accept you, they're guilty of rebelling against the king. And when a new king comes in, he wants to punish those that didn't accept his reign. And it would be normal for the king to come in and prosecute those people that all those years, you know, David was quite a few years king in Hebron, and they didn't accept him. So, in a certain way, people were afraid to make David the king because he would then go and kill and wipe out those that hadn't accepted him before. But now they saw that David really didn't bear a grudge. And that David wasn't responsible for Avner, and that David was not that kind of person. So they realized, see, they were all afraid. You know, David had been the refugee. We had been with Shaul chasing David around, and this was the same army. And so they were afraid to make David the king because who knows what he'll do. He's going to now be time to get even. Now it's time for him to take revenge. So but when they saw what kind of person David was, then they realized they had nothing to be afraid of. That David himself did not see them as his enemy. So now, after these episodes, they got an insight as to who David was. And so, Yevokol Shifte Yisrael, and so the tribes of Israel came together to David, and they said the following. Hinenu Asmacha Basarcha Anachnu. We are the same bones and the same flesh. Kind of an interesting way to express it, you know. We're family. We're one and the same. We're with you. We're with you, man. We're with you, right? So it's interesting. It's not like an expression of like, you know, you're the king, but it's like, you're ours. You know, there's a certain affection for David HaMelech that he speaks for the Jewish people. His sensitivities in the Book of Tehillim, and that we are, it's expressed in this way. We relate to what you've been through, what you've gone through. You're one of us. Don't think because you've been running the other kingdom that we don't relate to you. No, we've always felt that you're one of us. Now, it's funny how, in a certain way, it's Johnny come lately, you know, while, you know, when he was being chased and hiding in the caves and people would tell Shaul and he'd have to pick himself up and run away, you know, where were you? But now they want to say, don't think that this is a new thing, but we actually were always on your side. Right? Isn't that the way people are, right? That it's Kam Esmol Kam Shaul. By the way, we've always liked you, David. Biyo Shaul, not even when Shaul was the king. Don't you remember? I used to, Motze, maybe it's Israel. I think what they're trying to express was, I guess, you know, that they really, David was king, and they realized that he was the one that brought the people in and brought them out. It's an interesting expression. What does it mean, he brought them out and brought them in? So, sometimes there are people that lead soldiers to battle and don't bring them back. We can't really appreciate that. In World War, the Russians were famous for this. They would lead armies to battle, and they would just, they didn't arm them with very, you know, with bullets and rifle. They would just send masses and masses of people over. And then if they got killed, they just draft more because they had endless amounts of people. And the casualties in the Russian army were unbelievable. Like millions and millions of people in the World War II and World War I. And if people were drafted, it was like 90% a death sentence. Because, especially if you were drafted early, because it wasn't like today where I guess most of the people that go to war come back. They sent them, the Russians, they didn't even want them when they came back after World War II. They sent them to Siberia, the soldiers that were left, that were in the war camps. So, but David, he took the soldiers out and he made sure they came home. And so that's a leader. It brings the soldiers out and brings them back. Other people say that he did it himself. In other words, he didn't stand here and send the soldiers out. He brought them out himself. He led them. That was what David HaMelech was. He led the way. And so that's how... I think they also want to show David HaMelech wasn't king because they had no one else. They were coming to David and saying, well, we're not making you king because this one was killed and this one is this. They were prevented from making him king, but they really felt all along that he was the leader, that he was the one that had that quality, and he had already proved himself. So that's what they were expressing. Vayomer Hashem lecha. Now it's very interesting. Now all of a sudden they know. They said, and Hashem said to you, Ata tires ames Yisrael, and you're going to be the leader of my people Israel. You'll be my shepherd. And a shepherd is an example of a leader. He takes care of the sheep. He makes sure that they're not harmed by the wolves. He makes sure that they have enough food to eat. He makes sure that they have enough water. He makes sure that they have shelter. He shows them where to go. This is all the role of a leader of Israel. So, and David was a shepherd as a young person. God says that David kind of learned the role of a leader from being a shepherd. That's like a good job if you can take care of the young animals and the old animals, and you're sensitive to the needs of all the different needs of the animals. And also, animals don't pay you back, and sometimes they even yell at you. You know, they bark at you. So if you can handle that, so then you can handle the Jewish people. You can take care of them. You'll provide for their different needs. You'll be the leader of Israel. And so it's very interesting how they express it. Like, you know, it wasn't just that David was the only one left alive or that they were afraid of him. They saw him as their leader. They saw him as the shepherd of Israel. They saw him as the ideal person to lead the Jewish people. Yeah.
You know, it's possible that they felt that slightly all along or knew all along, but they were married to Shaw.
Right. I think so, right. I think that's what we see here. As soon as the monarchy of Shaw was no longer here, then David could come to the fore. Vayavu kol zikni Yisrael, Amalek, and all the elders came. These were the elders have always been the leaders of the Jewish people, the sages, the elders, v'ikris lema melech David bris. And David and they made a covenant, a chevron, lifnei Hashem, v'yivshes David lemelech ha'Yisrael. And now, for the first time, finally we're here, David melech Yisrael. David was made the king of Israel, and he was anointed again. A king also, in addition to being anointed by Hashem, also needs the people to accept him as their king. And so here we find the people accept him as their king, which, you know, today's Rosh Chodesh Adar, the month of Purim, and has started. And one of the themes of Purim is that on Purim, it says that we accepted the Torah, that the Jewish people accepted all the laws. And the famous question is, it says we accepted the laws at Mount Sinai. And we have a tradition that at Mount Sinai, Hashem held the mountain over our heads. And we didn't really have much choice. I mean, our food, you know, if we didn't accept the Torah, we couldn't exactly go back to Egypt. We were in the middle of the desert. We didn't have any food. And so we accepted the Torah, but it was out of a fear. And on Purim, what happened was that after the miracle of Purim, people accepted, they were so happy in their relationship with Hashem when they realized how Hashem protected them, that they accepted the Torah in a stronger way, which was, they were living amongst Gentiles, so nobody forced them to accept the Torah, but they did it out of joy. They did it out of love. And so the acceptance of the commitment to Torah that people found on Purim was in certain ways greater than the original connection, because it was one of it was done voluntarily. They did it on their own, or they did it on the and so that's the that's this this theme. So here they accepted David Melech to be the king on their own, and it's really going to begin the new chapter of the. Until now, David was in the process of becoming king, and again we see that things don't happen automatically. We, you know, people don't have patience. Everything's got to happen right away. David, it was a very, from the time he was anointed until now, was a little, I don't know how many years, quite a bit of time.
And, he was 30 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 40 years.
Right, so the question was, how old was he when he got anointed the first time? But,
He was a teenager, so maybe 15, 16 years old when they plucked him out of the sheep, into the limelight.
Right, that's right. Into the limelight.
Because he was the youngest of Jesse's children, so he wouldn't have been much more than a teenager.
Right. So we'll continue learning next.
Okay.
So we'll be off next week.
There will be no class.
Correct. And then the following. Okay.